Hello, and welcome to the 24th episode of AD Game Club, the monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. This month we will be discussing the 2018 remake of the 1998 3D platformer Spyro the Dragon. I am your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend and co-host, David.
Hi, I think it's a nice night to get to know more about Gnasty Gnork.
Gotcha. There might be a TV interview for that. Awkward long pause.
That's what editing is for.
I guess. At the top of the show, I would like to mention that AD Game Club, has a Facebook page where you can... you know what? I'm just starting that one over. This is still in the edit range. Why not? At the top of the show, I would like to mention that AD Game Club has a Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/ADGameClub. There you can keep up to date with us throughout the month and participate in the conversation by leaving comments. And also, stick around for after the show as we're going to talk about some of our other favorite games that we played in 2018 and probably some other 2018 or other video games that we want to discuss, because why not? We like talking about video games.
Of course. That's what we're here for.
Yep. So, without further ado, let's start talking about Spyro the Dragon. Specifically, we both played the Spyro Reignited trilogy, Spyro the Dragon. The original Spyro the Dragon, like I said, 1998, was developed by Insomniac Games, and was their second ever game. Do you have any experience with, either of these before this point, David?
No, I'd never heard of their, the first game that they made, but I have no experience directly with Spyro, but I did know that, like, I'd seen videos. I actually thought that it controlled differently. Like, from the videos I saw, I thought it controlled, like, car controls. You know, left just turns you left, right turns you right, and move, press up to move forward. And I was a little bit surprised that it doesn't.
Like the Silent Hill or Resident Evil tank controls?
Yeah, tank controls, I guess, is more common.
That would be weird. I'm glad it doesn't control like that. No, it controls like a platformer, right?
Yeah.
The first game by Insomniac was called Disruptor. I don't think I mentioned that before. And was a Doom clone that, even though it was a commercial failure, they were partnered up or made deals with Universal, at the time, and Universal helped pay for them to continue with Spyro the Dragon. So that's how we ended up here, kind of. Except for this remake isn't handled by Insomniac. It's handled by Toys for Bob, who is known for, in the past, making the Star Control series, and then a bunch of licensed platformers underneath Activision, primarily for Disney. Like, I think one of them I had actually played as a kid, one of the 101 Dalmatian games.
Hmm.
But then more recently and relevant, they are known for the Skylanders series of games, which does make a wonderful tie-in for why they were selected to work on Spyro. Because Skylanders started as a Spyro... Well, Spyro was the main character. The mascot character? Something like that.
Right. It was originally, like, a Spyro spin-off, and then it just became its own thing.
Yeah, I don't even know if Spyro... Well, I'm sure he's still in there as a toy, but he's probably not a main focus anymore. I don't know. You don't really hear about Spyro anymore. Anyways, I didn't really have any experience with Spyro growing up. I knew he was a small purple dragon, and I had played one of the GBA games, but it has been so long that I don't even know which of the GBA games it was that I had played.
Yeah, I've never played any of the Spyro games before, but I did know that it Spawn Skylanders, which briefly eclipsed the whole Spyro series and inspired a whole sub-industry of toy-to-life games that burned bright and then crashed and burned a few years later.
Yeah, I know it burned out for Disney, but the Lego one I haven't heard officially as having been killed off.
By the time I was getting into it and got it for you, it turned out it was on its last legs. Like there were a couple more, like the ones that had been announced at the time came out, but that was it.
Oh, okay.
They never had an official announcement. They just kind of stopped announcing things.
One way to die off. It definitely wasn't the Disney Infinity where they just completely imploded or something weird.
Right. Although, I guess technically, Nintendo Amiibos are still being made, but that's sort of supplemental to the actual games.
Yeah.
They don't actually make games to get you to buy Amiibos.
They definitely did it well, and they also have such a huge nostalgia product that everyone wants them whether there's a game for it or not.
Pretty much.
Like, I've never even used my Sonic Amiibo that I believe you got me, but yep. I love seeing it on my desk because it's a pretty good Sonic figurine.
Yeah, that was... I'm sure the key is that they're... Well, at least, you know, after the first wave or so, they're really good just figurines on their own at a reasonable price.
Yep. And, yeah, so anything you want to talk about before we actually start going in-depth on Spyro the Dragon?
Nope, I think we had enough of the Skylanders franchise taking over our podcast about Spyro. We can get back to Spyro again.
Yes. So, the plot of the game, I don't even think warrants spoilers, but the plot of the game is that an evil villain by the name of Nasty Nork has turned all of the adult dragons into crystals while he was watching a TV interview of the dragons describing this Nasty Nork as an ugly, simple-minded creature who poses no threat to the Dragon Kingdom. So yeah, he really shows them. except for Spyro, who I guess is the only child dragon in all of the Dragonland, avoids this crystallization and is now going off on an adventure through the different worlds to free the dragons and collect all of the stolen dragon treasure. And you do that. Anything you think you could add?
So, for reasons I'll bring up later, I decided to go looking at the actual manual for the original Spyro the Dragon, and I found out that, as with a lot of games of that era, there's considerably more information on the plot in the manual that they just didn't put in the game, or,
that makes
you know,
sense.
May have just been made up by whoever was designing the manual with no input from anyone else, as is often the case at games of that era. And, I mean, it didn't
the 90s.
Really add anything to the game itself, but I thought that was kind of funny. There's a whole thing about how the different areas are ruled by different dragon families, and they all banished Nasty Nork originally, and like I said, it didn't really add that much, but it was amusing that there was a little bit more plot than the zero plot that was in the game.
I would say the part that confused me the most is that it is all taking place as a TV interview. And then the cutscene ends and you are just plotted down without any instruction
right.
In front of a crystal dragon, which you don't need to go free. Like, it doesn't say, move forward and free the... It doesn't give you any instruction like that. It's just, yep, the game has started, and, you know, there's that thing in front of you, but, eh!
Yep. Also, no TV crew.
And, yeah, you never see the TV crew. They're just there as the camera. Maybe it was one of those things like the N64 Super Mario, where they wanted to make you feel like you were watching as the TV, like you were still watching the documentary follow Spyro through the adventure.
I don't know. At the end, he kind of comes back and goes, oh yeah, I forgot and left you here, so.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know. I think they just thought it would be funny.
Yeah. It does have a bit of humor to it.
Or they said, we need an excuse for one of these dragons to tell you, like, three lines of information. I guess he's being interviewed.
Okay. So, let's start talking about things that we liked. Would you like to start?
Yeah, this is definitely something in the remake specifically. A big part of this game is that, as you mentioned, there are crystallized dragons that have been trapped by Nasty Nork, and you just, you know, free as many of them as you can. There are some places that are, you know, to get to the next world, you have to free so many dragons, and there are also the checkpoints, which means that there are a lot of these dragons that you go save them and they pop up and say a couple lines of text and then vanish. But in the original, it was just, I watched some videos comparing the two versions.
Yes.
And in the original, they were just the same very generic model of a dragon.
Different colors, yeah.
But they just had different voice lines. And, in the remake, all of the voice lines are pretty much the same, but they have wildly different designs. Like, they obviously hired an artist or team of artists to just make interesting and different designs for all of the dragons. So even if all they say is, wow, thanks for saving me, Spyro, bye, they have some personality because they're carrying, you know, in was it like Dreamweaver's area, they tend to have like a sleeping cap or a stuffed animal or something. And in the, the swamp area that I forget the name of, they all have like leaves and reeds in their clothing. And I thought that was a really cool touch and a cool way to improve the whole idea was improving the visuals of the game, but that did a lot, with what was originally very generic designs.
It definitely does go into making each dragon more unique, and each time you free a dragon as its own little prize of, ooh, what's this dragon going to be like? Because there's the baker, the artist, the smith, the warrior, the magician, sort of like crazy. Like, they're always fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it also really played well when you get to the final world and you start running into a couple of the dragons that you have to free a second time. And you still recognize them because they are so unique.
And then even when you beat it in the credits, there's a montage of just art of Spyro hanging out with the dragons and like trying to bake a cake with the baker and trying to... make potions with the magician and that sort of thing. It was very cute.
Yes. I completely agree with that. Something that I want to point out is really liking about this remake, and it was mostly true of the original, but really stood out with the remake, is just how many colors there are. Like, this is a very bright and colorful game that just plays wonderfully on a HD TV. And then just the colors, the sounds, explosions, just all of the sensations are filled. And you're just constantly... you're collecting these multicolored jewels. And every time you collect a jewel, a number of what that jewel's value... flies out and is like in the world itself bouncing. There's just so much feedback in this game and it looks so great. It really reminded me of a casino, and how there's all the lights blinging and the sounds and the excitement. It's just so entertaining to watch this game almost as much as it is to play it. And I really want to point that out as something I liked.
Yeah, the watching the original, it was very bright and colorful, and you know, the enemy designs had a pretty good amount of personality for being very low polygon, but it was mostly bright and colorful and very flat. And they did a fantastic job of keeping the bright colors and that feeling of, like you said, of things constantly happening, and gave it a lot more texture and made it more interesting. And like, I saw a comparison of one of the levels that just has a big wide area of grass with some sheep in it, and it was just a completely flat plain in the original, and in this version it was rolling hills. And
Gentle rolling hills, yeah.
But it really did a good job of taking that bright, colorful quality and emphasizing it by adding texture and good designs on top of it.
So, that hill especially, that area you're talking about, it is a little bit harder to find some of the jewels than it was in the original game, in my opinion. That's about where my comparison video cut out. Well, I stopped watching it, but yeah, I looked at that and was like, oh, this is a little bit easier. but the feeling is still there. This is definitely one of those games where you could have that memory as a kid of what the game looked like, and this game just is that. Like, this is how you would remember this game as a kid, but then looking as HD and, like, if it had been made today, but it still looks the same, it feels the same. It's just a really great experience. And then we both also wanted to mention the game design. How about you go first?
Yeah, it's very simple, but very good. You have two attacks. You have the flame attack and the charge attack, and enemies that are clearly signaled whether you can use one or the other, because you can't charge.
Size or metal, yeah.
Right. You can't charge enemies that are bigger than you, and you can't flame enemies that are wearing metal, and occasionally you'll run into enemies that are large and have metal armor, and then you have to, you know you have to figure out some other trick.
Like those spiders.
Yes. Those damn dirty spiders. But it works really well. And I even went on and played played the other two games in the Reignited trilogy after I finished this one. And they really didn't change the formula much, and for good reason. Like, you get basically the ability to swim and to climb ladders, which are just, you know, environmental abilities, and then you get a, when you're gliding, you get a little, instead of dropping straight down, if you hit the triangle, you go up a little bit, which makes for, you know, some other tricky glides, but...
Oh, interesting.
The basic controls are the same, and even in the third game, you actually get, you can control other characters, but Spyro still controls the same as he did in the second one. So, it worked.
That's cool to hear. I have not played the sequels yet that are in the trilogy. I do plan to eventually, but my time is a little bit more limited, and I want to try and get some other games finished before the year wraps up, which we'll talk a bit later on, but... Yeah, I also wanted to talk about that simple game design. What I wanted to focus in on was how you had mentioned it earlier, that the requirements to move forward are pretty straightforward. Of like, the first world is just you have to collect so many dragons, and then the second, or I guess realms. The first realm is you have to collect so many dragons. The second realm is so much of the treasure, I believe. The third one is so many eggs, maybe. That's about it for the collectibles, right? But the goals to move from realm to realm are very easy. Like, I think the first realm was 20 dragons. But I'm pretty sure I had more than that by that the time I was leaving that realm. I don't remember the final count, but you get... Was it 20 or was it like 12?
I think it was
10. 10? Maybe I had like 20 when I was leaving.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure you could skip the whole like second to last area because you can like easily... I mean, I'd like to explore the whole... like overworld, the whole homeworld, before going into the levels, and in the last couple of them, like when I found the balloonist that takes you to the next area, he was just, yep. Before I entered any of the other levels, he'd just be like, all right, ready to go?
Yeah, I don't even know what the challenge was for the final one or two. But yeah, like the game is, to get through the game, 80% of the game, I would say, is just super straightforward and easy to get through. But if you want to get that last 20%, they did a really good job, in my opinion, of hiding it away or making it that little bit harder to get to, where there's a challenge and that feeling of accomplishment for actually achieving that 100% per level that I feel like they did a really fantastic job at.
Yeah, I agree. There were some areas that I was surprised how much trouble I was having, but it still usually felt satisfying when I actually got there. I also appreciated that they had... it's possible to get 100% in each level as soon as you get to it, so I could go into a level and get absolutely everything and feel satisfied moving on, which not a lot of games... these days do. A lot of games still let you just go through the game linearly, but in something like even the later Spyro games, there'll be some ability that you need that you say, okay, well, I can't swim yet, so I'll only do as much as I can in this level, and I'll come back and get 100% later. So it was just nice to be able to sweep through each level one by one and know that I was totally done.
And it even tells you, it'll, like, as you complete things of, like, you found all the dragons, it'll tell you that at the bottom of the screen. Once you get all the treasures, it'll tell you that. And then when you get to 100% of the level, it'll tell you that. And it's really good about that. Yep. I really liked this game. But we'll get more into that later. Let's talk about things we didn't like. Unless there's something else you want to talk about that you like, but I don't. I didn't see anything else
just
on the list.
Just talking about the stuff that's hidden away and harder to find, I think they did make it significantly easier in the remake because in the... Well, I don't know. Did you use the have sparks point to treasure button?
Wait, what? There's a button for that?
Yes, if you press in the left control stick, sparks will point to the nearest piece of treasure.
What? All right. Okay.
Well, apparently,
so
you had a much harder time getting 100% than I did.
There was only one level that I ran into where I didn't know where the treasure was. Can you guess which level that was? I wonder.
Was it treetops?
No, I knew okay. Where treetops was. Yeah. I'll talk about treetops later. The one level that I couldn't find was the desert-ish. The one where you see the dragon at the top of the, like, buildings, and he's
right.
And you're like, oh, what's over there across the river? And he's all like, why don't you fly over there and find out? There are jewels and a chest behind the starting building.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There's nothing that gives you any clue that you can get behind that building. I got really frustrated with that one because I spent a lot of time there until I just started flying in random directions trying to find where that last like 20 jewels were.
Yeah,
that was the one that I would have liked, that ability that I had no idea existed. Oh my gosh.
I think about 90% of the time I used that, it was because I had gone through the whole level and missed one gem that was hidden in the grass somewhere.
Oh, that would have also been easier for that, the, like we said earlier, the Rolling Hills one, where there really was just like, there was a cluster of little bumps that perfectly hit a green gem inside the grass area there, like that.
Yeah, I think that was
would have been easier too.
Stonehill, I want to say.
Yeah.
Stonehill.
Sounds right. I'll tell Lindsay. So that's something else I could say as a like, is that this is one of the few games that my wife Lindsay, who is, I mean, she plays some games, but mostly it's games that she remembers as having played as a kid. Spyro the Dragon is one of those games that she remembers as a kid. And she, when she realized that this was a remake of that first game, she jumped at the chance to join me in playing this, and that was actually a really fun time of being able to play this game with my wife, doing the whole like one level or life, sort of passing the controller back and forth. We
did
that for
nice.
A while. And now she's playing her own save game. I think she's playing it right now downstairs. That's at least how I left her, was she was playing this. And I'll tell her about this Sparks thing. She'll probably love that.
That's nice, but you realize that now I'm going to have to report you to the podcast police because you didn't complete the game yourself entirely.
What?
Look, I don't make the rules. I just enforce them.
I think you are making up rules.
Well,
anyways,
we can deal with that later.
Do you have? Let's go to something we didn't like. I'll go ahead and start. I did not like the instant deaths from falling or from landing in water. And there are some really tricky jumps that I swear I made, but it like clipped enough on the side that I fell. Very annoying.
Yeah, it got really frustrating in some areas where you would just end up like being almost done with the level and then you accidentally fall in water and then you die and everything resets.
Not everything, it's just like all of the enemies since the last save point.
Right,
reset.
Everything. Well, in some cases it would happen because I hadn't hit a checkpoint, but
oh yeah.
But yeah, everything you collected stays no matter what, but all of the enemies after that would reset.
The treetops was, in my opinion, the worst of this. Which, if you don't remember, that's the level where you do a lot. That you do a lot of the supercharge mechanic, because you're jumping between tree to tree. And it was just so many times. That was the one time where I actually hit a game over.
Wow.
And that this leads into my biggest frustration with the game, is that, like I said earlier, with the 20% thing, sometimes they hide it away where it's just hard to find, and then other times they hide that last bit somewhere where you need to pull off a jump, I would say perfectly, in order to reach it. And that's how I felt about the treetops, was that the way I found, and I would expect is the official way, is that you have to do the charge not following the charge paths between four or five different trees, like jumping where you're not really supposed to be jumping, but just like turning enough that you make it anyways. And
right,
I died
like,
so many times.
Jumping off of a ramp and then in midair doing almost a U-turn.
Yeah.
To hit something else on the other side of the level. And then jump off of that and do another U-turn.
And that very first jump that you would use to like start that chain, at least the one I was using to start the chain, I had about a 50% if I would even make that jump. It was so annoying. That really was an overly frustrating moment. Yeah. Because, like, one of the tricks you can do with that is that when you get to the even say in the game that the best way to do the glide is you get to the highest point of your jump and then start gliding, right?
Right.
And that really works well for the super jumps as, or the supercharge as well when you use that as a jump. But because you need to chain this charge, I didn't find a way to do the glide to make sure I make the jump. And then go into another supercharge. Like, I just couldn't pull that off successfully.
I don't think you can do that.
There were a couple of levels where you had to do basically U-turns for the supercharge. But that was definitely the worst of it, in my opinion. Treetops, I hate you. I hate you! Anyways.
A thing that I didn't like, you actually brought it up near the start, which was that we start the game and there's just no explanation of anything, of what you're supposed to be doing, of what the controls are. The first level that I found was actually a supposed to be secret level.
There's no way that's the first level you found, because there is a very large gate, like, right next to that first dragon.
Well, like I said, I was running around the whole home world first, and I actually did do the whole thing before that. I just said I was running around, like, the main field, and there's the stepping stones that as you jump on them, they light up. So I lit all of them up, and it revealed another gate, so I went in there.
Pretty cool.
All of the controls changed. Well, not all of the controls, but most of the controls changed because it was a flying level. There was also no explanation.
One flying level per realm that plays completely differently, different rules. Thank God that one didn't count against your lives.
Right. And, like, it didn't even tell me what I was supposed to be doing, except that when you hit the water or run out of time, it then shows you a list of things you should be doing, of either stuff to destroy or gates to fly through. And so I had to then infer, I need to do all of these in one run within the time limit.
To get that bonus for the all-in-one.
So, I think the problem is that this was from an era of games where you were expected to actually read the manual to learn how to play a game, except this being a modern remake, there was no manual.
Yeah.
So, I feel like they should have added some little, like, I don't know, start the game, like, tutorial area, or even just a pop-up that says, hey, here's what you're supposed to do, but
it really wouldn't have required much.
No. Just, like, you know, save the dragons. These gates take you to levels where you get gems and dragons.
The flying levels are in no way mandatory, and that's probably the only saving grace. As long as you don't care about 100%, you don't have to do them. So,
see, once I figured out what I was supposed to do, those were actually my favorite. I would end up looking for those right away when I got, well, you know, after 100%ing the home world, I would go look for the flying levels, because I actually enjoyed figuring out the optimal path to get everything in time.
I had fun with them. I did enjoy the flying, but I also got too frustrated with them to say that I truly enjoyed them. Until that is, and this plays well with my achievement, I did go for the platinum in this first game, which is my sign of I really like you. I'm going to get the platinum. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put that extra time in. And there are several achievements related to different activities in the flying. And I really enjoyed the fact that once you get the all-in-one, once you get all of the treasures, going back removes the time limit. The counter actually counts up instead of down.
Yes,
so,
that was nice.
I that is when I actually got to enjoy, like, take my time and explore and experience that area, whereas when I'm doing it with that timer counting down and I'm like, oh, I have to go. Like, I'm so focused on the goal of it that I didn't get to enjoy it, if that makes sense. So, that's why I don't like the Dead Rising games. I can't do timers. Too much stress.
That's fair.
Yeah. So got, achievement, I did get the platinum, mm-hmm. so that was awesome.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't have any like a special high highs or low lows, but there was one more thing that I disliked that I just remembered, which was the boss battles just weren't very good. The boss battles were mostly just a level where halfway through the level you find the boss and then they run away from you and you catch up to them.
Well, one of them actually attacks you. I don't know, they may all attack me, but only one actually attacked me.
Right. Well, I think they're all supposed to attack you. The first one I didn't realize was supposed to attack me until the last...
I didn't even realize that was the boss until the right. achievement went off.
Me either. So, yeah, the bosses were just not very good. The later games have much better boss battles where you dropped into an arena and have to actually fight the boss.
The Nasty Nork has an achievement where you have him do, like, 5 laps or something like that. And that really was lame.
Yes.
But otherwise, I actually had fun with all the boss fights. Like, yes, they're very simple, but I would say that that plays with the rest of the game as being pretty simple. So,
yeah,
it was fine with me.
I think the only time that it felt like I was actually fighting, or not even fighting a boss, but that it felt different from just running through a normal level was in the last section of the Nasty Nork fight when you are chasing him and the platforms are disappearing beneath you as they're receding into the walls. That was nice. That was the only time where I thought, okay, this is something that other levels have not done before.
It actually took me like halfway through that sequence before I realized that the platforms were shrinking or going into the walls. I would say my favorite boss fight was the... I think it was the Metalhead? Electrified or something.
Oh, yeah, that was a good boss battle. I forgot about that.
And you can use his attack to destroy the little, like, the electrodes that are charging him up. Or you can go in and attack those things yourself to destroy them faster. But, like, there's more going on there that I had a pretty good time with that one.
Yeah, that one was good. I'll give Metalhead a pass.
So, I think that is going to almost wrap up this game. Do you want to provide final thoughts?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Like I said, it wasn't especially high highs or low lows, but it was a fun game throughout, and I can see why the original Spyro game is fondly remembered and launched a whole series. It was just a solid, well-designed game with a lot of colorful art, and I'm glad that I got to experience it in a way that was a lot more enjoyable than I found the original art.
Yeah, I completely agree. This game is pretty great. It's easy enough to play that I can imagine going back and playing it as a kid and enjoying it, and it's definitely on my pile of games I will try to introduce to my kids someday. At the same time, while being so kid-friendly, it is also hard enough that, to 100% it, that it engages me as an adult, as a, like, not pro gamer, but, you know, like a avid gamer who plays probably too many games in his spare time as it is. the constant on-screen feedback, the fact that the game is just so fun to play and explore, while mechanically the game is simple, they do quite a lot with those few rules that they set in place. And throughout the game, the pacing, it constantly feels like there's new things happening and that there's still more to discover around each corner. And I like this game. I'm really happy with having chosen it for this month.
Me too.
Look at that. Less than 40 minutes and we have talked about a video game.
Well, that's probably a good thing since we have more to talk about.
So before we get to our after show, I am very excited to say that our next game for January is going to be Marvel Spider-Man for the PlayStation 4. So get excited, get web-slinging, and join us then for January's game, Spider-Man. Yes, Spider-Man! As we wrap up here, I would like to also take a moment and thank Carbohydrin and Funk Fiction for letting us use their songs for our intro and outros respectively. Their work is great, and you can check out more by following the links in the description. And with that, we leave you by saying, game on! Maybe I should have saved that for the after show.
Well, too late now.
Too late now. I'm keeping it no matter what. So, David, let's talk about our favorite games of 2018 that we played. Doesn't necessarily have to be games that came out this year. If it is, awesome. But if not, you know, the more thing is more so that we played it this year. So.
Right.
How about you start us out with your first game? It doesn't have to be in any particular order. Mine are not in an order.
Well, first of all, I figured I should probably discount any games that I had previously played and then replayed this year. So Undertale is out.
Because you got it on Switch.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Well, that, and I guess we'll talk about it a little bit. I think I might have told you this. I played it with some friends who had...
Oh, yes, you did. Yes.
Well, one had tried and the other just wasn't interested in playing games that much. And it was a lot of fun playing it with other people that were new to the game and would not have been able to experience it without me playing through the actual difficult gameplay. So that's my honorable mention.
To tell them about how we did a podcast of that game and that it's like 2+ hours long of us talking about it?
I think I mentioned that to them before, but I didn't bring it up while we were playing it.
Ah, missed out. Okay, but anyways.
I try not to go overboard on how, oh my god, this is my favorite game of all time. So. When we got to the end of the game and I was talking about how glad I was that I got to show them, they're like, oh, I didn't realize that you were that enthusiastic about it.
Like, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, my actual top game of first playing in 2018 is Celeste, which I played on the Switch, but I believe is on the PC and maybe other systems as well.
Yeah, I think it's on everything at this point. Except for Vita, where I would have probably played it. Actually, let's check to see if it's on Vita. The show's officially over, so I can type without feeling bad.
Sure.
As of February, there is no chance of it coming to Vita.
Hmm.
Eh. Well,
so Celeste is a... fantastic platforming game. It's the genre of like super hard platformers that I enjoy, where not only is not only are the levels very difficult, but when you die you respawn almost instantly, so you can try this like one jump over and over and over until you get it perfect, and that's very satisfying. It also had a simple but evocative story, and it had just sort of a touch of what makes my favorite games my favorite games, which is that the story blended with the fact that you were playing a game in a very natural way, which is that the main character is trying to climb this mountain that is infamous for being unclimbable because she just wants to prove that she can, and it's an arbitrary challenge that she wants to do to prove that she can actually accomplish something she sets out to do, which is, you know, why we play really difficult games like Celeste, is to prove that we can.
Cool. So I had looked at this one earlier. It is on my list of games that I would like to play eventually, probably, but it, at the same time, it reminded me a lot of Super Meat Boy, and I bounced off hard on that game when it actually got difficult. I just was not having fun dying 100 times and just feeling frustrated
That's
the entire
fair.
Time.
I don't think it ever got to the point of, like, the worst levels of Super Meat Boy. Super Meat Boy actually felt like it was being... Actually, I should revise that statement. There are extra levels that you can unlock, and then even further extra levels after that in Celeste that really are completely ridiculous. But the... Like, the main story never gets to the intensity that... the last half of Super Meat Boy, I would say, did.
Yeah, I think I barely made it to the halfway point, if that. But yeah, that's the main reason I didn't check that one out.
I will say that, well, I guess there's a small spoiler for Celeste, is that you can unlock B-side levels, which are just a harder version of the level that you just finished, if you find a hidden thing. I forget exactly what it was, but if you get enough of, I think if you beat all of the B-sides, it then unlocks a C-side version of each level, which is even worse. And when I first unlocked that and I looked at the C-side for the first level, I just looked at it and I said, okay, nope, I'm done. I'm never going to complete this.
But the true ending!
I went back the next day and started playing it, and I did eventually get all of the Seaside levels. So
oh,
that's,
wow.
That's
Congrats.
Just who I am. And then I unlocked the Golden Strawberry, which you can only get if you beat each level without dying. And no, I never did that. That was my stopping point. Notably, Celeste also recently won the Best Independent Game at the Game Awards, and was nominated and robbed for Best Music.
What won Best Music?
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah, that was earlier on in the show, huh, when they were just sweeping.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason why I say, like, as part of this, as our favorite games... is that they're the games that we played, and all of those award shows, it's also of the games that they played. And so, of course, a hugely popular game like Red Dead is going to be played by the most people, and thus going to win the awards of the judges who haven't played, or enough of them haven't played Celeste. So mm-hmm. that's just going to happen.
Part of the reason that it's... I actually find it kind of funny is that the composer and musician for Celeste, Lena Rain, was at the show playing live and also presented one of the awards. So she was at the show where she was passed up for Best Music.
It's still nominated. That's still something you can go around and tout, right?
Right. I'm just bitter. Not necessarily because Celeste is my favorite game of the year, but also because the music itself was fantastic, and one of those soundtracks that I immediately bought.
A soundtrack to a game that I bought and have played a lot over this last year is Persona 5.
Of course.
A 2017 game that I played through most of 2017... but I also played for a couple months in 2018 when I finally finished it. So it counts as a 2018 game.
And see here, I went back and double-checked that Celeste came out in January.
Yes, yes it did. So yeah, one of my top games that I know I talked at least a little bit last year. I don't remember how much I said, but Persona 5 is one of the best games I've played in a while. Just everything about it is fantastic. It is not the levels of Persona 4 Golden. The way that the story and the characters play out is not quite as good as Persona 4 was, but Persona 5 still has fantastic characters. Like, it's one of those things of everything about it is fantastic. The only reason you even have to say something negative is that there's something else out there that is slightly better, at least in a little bit, and it's just that love of the series that it's like, well, please play it. If you don't like this one, then go play this other one that is also fantastic. I don't know. I just so much love for Persona.
I don't even,
there's so much. Everything mm-hmm. about the school day stuff, to the story, to the just the like building out the RPG stuff, the whole Pokemon side of collecting all of the different personas and breeding them together to get more personas with the special skills or stats that you care about so that you're truly unstoppable. Like, it's just every itch that I have as a gamer, this game fills. And as an anime fan, this game fills. So it checks all of my boxes. And it is... And so here's something that I would say about Persona 5 over Persona 4 is that I have more inclination to go back and replay Persona 5 than I did 4. The mechanically and the... the experience itself, I do have that desire to go back and replay that's probably one of my higher praises that I could give it. It's that it's a 120-hour game that I am tempted to go back and play through a second time.
That's impressive. I actually got it just recently on the PlayStation Store Thanksgiving sale. Or very Black cool. Friday sale, or what have you. So, I may, in fact, start it soon. I bought it on the PlayStation 4 just in time to find out that Joker is going to be in Smash Brothers, which means it will almost certainly be re-released on the Switch.
It definitely is unlikely to get re-released, but maybe. There's the possibility.
Well, maybe. We'll see.
I mean, yes... Bayonetta. Well, I guess most of those, because Cloud was released on Smash, and it just came... Is it just recently came out, Final Fantasy VII, on Switch? Or is that still coming? I remember the announcement, like, a month or two ago that, like, all of the Final Fantasies were coming to Switch, but... Well, most of, not 8, for some reason. 8 is not included.
No, I think... Those are all coming next year.
Next year. So there, that gives you a time frame of Smash character. You have, 4 years until maybe it comes out on Switch? anyways, yes.
I may be able to complete it by then.
Maybe. I loved Persona 5. If you could play through... I would say the first... One of the faults of Persona 5, again, over the others, would be that it is the slowest game to get started. The first one is immediately... I haven't played through Persona 2 yet. It's on my list. Persona 3, though, is like 2 hours to really get started. And then Persona 4 is like 4 hours to get started, and then Persona 5 is a good 6 to 8 hours before you are given any sort of freedom to really play the game yourself. It does have a very long on-ramp that turns a lot of people off, but I think it's worth it.
It is kind of a hard sell when most of the games that I play can be... finished in that time at this point.
It's 120 hours. But that was my anime. Like I instead of watching anime for a season or two, it was Persona 5, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What's your next game?
My next game is Hollow Knight, which I think did come out previous years on other systems.
Yes, PC it was last year.
And I actually, that was one of the games that people were talking for a long time about how it was going to come out on Switch, and it kept getting delayed. And it turns out it was totally worth the wait. Well, I guess I don't know that it was worth waiting for the Switch specifically, but it was a game worth waiting for. It hit all of the boxes for me for sort of like open world Metroidvania, even more than a lot of other classic games like, you know, Super Metroid. It
was more of a Metroid game for you than Super Metroid?
It did the things that those games do better, which is to say that Symphony of the Night would be a better comparison because it opened up a lot. You didn't have to... Super Metroid, for as good as it is, you still are locked into a particular order of places to go unless you get into weird sequence breaking. But...
True.
Hollow Knight, similar to, you know, how Symphony of the Night opens up when you get to the Inverted Castle, but in a much more organic manner, Hollow Knight, after you complete the first area and start exploring the second area, you find outlets into other places, and there's a point where you kind of get the plot and get some objectives, like, hey, this is what you're here to do, and here's the places where you need to do it. Even then, like, there are a ton of side areas, or, I don't know, side quest isn't quite right, but the point is, through the vast majority of the game, there were two or three places where I said, oh, I know that this passage leads off in this direction, but I could go somewhere else, and I had my choice of places to explore, and it was never like, this is the main path, and here's some other thing that is a single room with a secret. It always felt like there were big sprawling areas that I just didn't have the time to explore all of them until, you know, eventually I did, but it was just a fantastic sense of openness and freedom, and the combat was at just the right level of, like, getting a little frustrating, but I knew that I could, you know, keep at it until either I figured out the secret to a particular boss, which some in the earlier part of the game, you really had to figure out what this boss was teaching you, and once you figured out that trick, it was easy, or in the later half, just had to find the pattern and then get the pattern down pat until I could do it flawlessly, and it was, you know, for some people, I can definitely see it being too frustrating, but for me, it was just right, and I had a lot of fun.
Cool. Hollow Knight is on my list. I am undecided if I want to pick it up on the PS4, or if I want to wait and make that one of my Switch games that I get when I eventually get a Switch. It could happen.
I will say that I'm glad that I beat it. At the time, there were two out of the three free updates had been released, and completing everything in the game at that point brought you up to 106%, which I did. Then the last free update came out, and it turned out it was a boss rush mode that just makes the bosses harder and harder. Like, there's a second harder version, and then a third version of every boss that kills you in one hit, in addition to being faster and having more HP than the original version. And then you have gauntlets that you have to fight, like, 15 bosses in a row. And that was the point where I said, you know, I just divorced from all of the exploration and discovery. I don't find battle after battle to be fun at all, so I took my... I completed everything in the entire game except for this and left.
Oh, that is very cool. So that was Hollow Knight. That, yes, very cool. So my next game that I wanted to mention is the Uncharted The Lost Legacy game that came out. I think that came out this year. Do you
That
happen to
sounds about
remember?
right.
Yeah, I think it came out this year. Anyways, it's that same Uncharted game that we remember from Uncharted 4, but not Nathan Drake. It stars completely blanking on their names, so that doesn't matter.
Was August of 2017.
Oh, it came out late last year. Anyways, I played it this year and it was great.
And
What
it's Chloe and Nadine.
Chloe and Nadine. What I really liked about The Lost Legacy is that, like I said, it's the same gameplay and the same engine and everything as Uncharted 4, so it still looks fantastic. In fact, this was one of the first games that I played with my new HDR TV, so having those more I guess it's the high dynamic range, right? The
Yes.
more the brighter colors, like there's some purples that just really pop out
Ooh,
in this
nice.
game that it's very impressive. But what's beyond that, what I really liked is that as a smaller, shorter game, the pacing is a lot better. And they also did a whole instead of it being a continuous linear path throughout the game, a very large segment of the game is actually a sort of open world that you are free to explore in a Jeep. And one of the things that you can get by exploring this and finding certain elements will unlock a treasure that will help track the other sort of artifacts that you find throughout the game. It'll sort of as you're doing your normal exploring or adventuring, climbing around, it'll go off as a signal saying, hey, there's an artifact or something nearby. And that way, that played a lot more into how I like to play the Uncharted games of when that goes off, then I was like, ooh, okay, I'm going to stop for a moment and really explore this area. Is there a nook or a cranny that I may have missed if I had just kept going forward like I normally do? So having that signal like really improved the game for me, and I'm surprised that it took them this long in the series to have such a device.
Yeah, that sounds
But that
great.
was I really enjoyed that. I am adverse to playing with guides, so having anything like that really helps.
Oh,
I'm
well
going to
then,
have to find out if that Sparks thing really
I was gonna say then you'll really love this
helps.
feature in Spyro the Dragon. Well, you can use that in the other two games if you get to playing them as well.
Cool. I will. Like I said earlier, I really like the series, so I'll get to those eventually. Next game for you.
The one that you lent to me, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this game. I think I listed it as one of my games of the year last year.
I believe so, and I understand why. It was a lot of fun. It just had, it took a while to get going, but it had really satisfying sort of exploration, hunting, doing side quests. It had a lot of characters that I liked, getting to know them. Like I'm gonna forget all of their names, but
Nil
like
is about the only one I remember at this point.
I really liked the soldier that you meet that kind of seems like a minor character when you meet him at the ceremony, and then he ends up being the head of the army, and you have to help him find his sister. He had a nice arc, and I was actually ignoring the main quest to go help him. I don't know, overall it was a really, really good open world adventure game, and I'm glad that I finally put in the time to play it.
That is very awesome. And that is one of those that I will eventually get around and play the DLC eventually, the Frozen Wilds.
Oh, and as you were saying about Platinums, I did in fact get the platinum trophy for that.
As did I.
In fact, originally when I was looking through the trophies, I saw there was one for, was it knocking down all of the training dummies in the
Embrace. That one was difficult to find.
Yeah, I just looked up a guide for that, but even so I thought that's obnoxious, and it's one of those things that will just end up being me looking at a guide and going to every single one because I don't even know which ones I've already hit just because I've sometimes hit them while wandering around. Except that then when I finished the game, that was the only trophy that I didn't have, so I said, okay, well, I may as well.
Yeah, I looked up a guide to find all of those training dummies. I had knocked down about half, I think, on my own. So,
yeah. I mean, it's a pretty good sign when only one trophy for a full-sized game like that is something that I decide I want to do just for the completion's sake. Everything else was either something I did without knowing there was a trophy, or because I looked at it and said, oh yeah, that sounds fun.
Or there are several that you are driven to want to do. That's the way to do it.
Right. I think the... There was one that was, like, the major missable one, which is if you get to the end game without having done certain major side quests, if you have done certain quests, then you have the... all of the side characters that come to help you, and you get a trophy for that. That, of course, I realized I had already done all of those just because I wanted to do the side quests and I liked all of these characters and wanted to help them.
I finished the game and then decided I wanted to continue playing, and that's when I went and did those side quests. So once I had done all of the side quests and had done everything else, I then went and started the end sequence so that they could show up. I did that last... That was my last trophy.
Oh, okay. So I didn't realize you could go back and do it after the fact. That's good.
Yep.
I will say... This is big spoilers for it, sort of, but I just thought it was really amusing was that... what was the whole nation that worshipped the sun god?
I don't remember their names at this point.
Well, they have... When you get there, there's this huge spire that you see... Black spire you see in the distance.
Yes. And, oh, I know. You've told me this story.
Okay. Yeah, well, just for the podcast, huge spire you see in the distance, and when you get to the... major city, it's like... Well, I don't know what measurements, but it was like a mile or two away from the city, it seems like.
It's right next door, yeah.
There's this big plateau where the city is on, and then another plateau a little ways away with this spire on it. And so my initial assumption was, of course, since that's the major thing you can see, and their whole religion revolves around the original Sun King following the spire to found the city, that the Sun King's palace would be there. But no, it's on the other side of the city. So I went and just, you know, climbed the plateau up to where the spire was to see what it was, and there was a whole empty plaza, and I just said, oh, okay, obviously this is going to be a big, you know, major battle, and so when you get the secret revealed of what the spire actually is, I immediately said, oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That's why I'm going to go fight there at the foot of it in the final battle.
Yep. It's a really good game. One that I could not help but comparing to the Breath of the Wild that had come out the same time. So,
you know what? While playing it, I thought it was a very different game from Breath of the Wild.
It is. Like, it is very different. How in all of the ways that I wish Zelda was.
I can see why they would be compared by people just looking at trailers that hadn't played either game, but having played them both, I wouldn't even say that they are in the same, like, maybe the broadest sense of genre, but, like, sure. I wouldn't even say, like, oh, if you liked this, you might like that.
Because, no, I wouldn't say that.
they're just very, very different. You know, Breath of the Wild is extremely open and system-driven, and, like, I don't know, I guess if I describe them both, they're going to sound similar, but they just felt very, very different to me, because, largely because Breath of the Wild was all about being in, mostly empty expanse, and Horizon Zero Dawn felt much more driven by the characters and the stories that you find everywhere. And it really, despite being a
you could literally say that about both of the games.
No, I really don't think that Breath of the Wild was
what I mean is that the post-apocalypse applies to both. Yeah.
No,
the fact that the story is spread throughout is true of both.
I mean,
you said something
Wild,
else just a moment ago that was also true of both.
Breath of the Wild felt like, at least to me, it felt like the settlements are very siloed. Like, here's a place where all the people are, and the people in this place don't really talk to the people from that place. You know, you go there, and there's a little story if you talk to people and you get their side quests, but for the most part, it's like little self-contained villages, and when you're running around, maybe you'll run into someone on the road, but for the most part, you're climbing mountains and running through forests and, you know, blowing a boat across the sea, and it felt like you're very alone. Horizon Zero Dawn, I felt like all of the places were very connected. You would run into, you know, this guy that you met in the beginning, you would run into him in the major city and find out that he's the head of the guard, and then he would have you go to a different place to investigate something, and it turned out it was connected to the people from his homeland, and so you had to hunt down criminals from his homeland, and it just felt like the people were more important than Breath of the Wild, where the people were kind of there because you had to have people, and that wasn't what most of the game was for me.
Sure.
Anyway.
Got a little sidetracked there, but I'm going to be bringing up Zelda more later. But first, I wanted to bring up Shadow of the Colossus, the 2018 remake. It counts as an open world, right? But something that I had forgotten, I played this game so many times, but for some reason in my head, I had it that you could go to any of the Colossus in any order, like a true open world game. Mm-hmm. But actually, like, replaying Shadow of the Colossus, the remake, I realized that, oh wait, no, you do have to go to them in order, so it isn't truly open.
Really?
Like that. Yeah. You don't do them as you wish. You have to do them in order. There isn't a way to trigger any of them out of order.
I thought you could do that in the original.
What? Trigger them out of order?
Out of order, yeah.
Nope.
Huh.
Nope, it's a trick. It really is. That it's just the way they designed that game and the way that you you sort of like unleash each one. It feels like it could have happened if you had just gone this way. But no, it really doesn't work that way.
Well, then it was a very good trick.
Yeah, but yeah, it is stuff like coming back to this game, which I've already played 4 times, but this is very much like the Spyro remake of, it's another company that took this game and remade it using today's like engines.
Mm-hmm.
So graphically it looks amazing and it plays, I would say the same way, but maybe better. I don't know, the controls and everything, like the Ego games are always a little weird on how they control, but it still feels great. But yeah, it was fantastic. And there are little nods, or like teases of their future games of the Last Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
In this one that I kind of want to boot up my earlier copy and just 100% verify that teaser is unique sort of thing. I could look it up online, but yeah, there's just so much to this game, and I did fall in love with it all over again. And it's one that I will be replaying so many more times in the future that I definitely still have to list it. Even if it's remake, even if I've essentially played this game many times before, I still think it's worth listing as one of my favorite games of 2018.
Well, fair enough.
Shadow of the Colossus 2018 remake. Okay, David, list one of the games that I wish I had had the time to play this year.
Into the Breach. I actually played Into the Breach a bit on my PC whenever it came out on the PC, which I think was 2017, but it came out on the Switch, and I thought, you know, that was fun enough, I'll give it another shot, and it turned out to be perfect for the Switch. Just the sort of pick it up, play a level or two, and put it down and do something else. I don't know, the Switch is very bad at tracking time, unfortunately, but I probably put like 30 or 40 hours into it and got every single achievement on...
Oh, very nice.
Like every... I mean, the achievements
are... I thought the Switch didn't do achievements.
Well, no, but the game itself has achievements.
Oh, okay.
Because each achievement gives you a medal, and you use medals to unlock future squads. So you can essentially keep playing the game over and over, but with different squads. And each squad, like,
very much FTL.
That totally changes the gameplay.
Very FTL.
I played a little bit of FTL, but didn't get that into it. Although, I did find out just completely... Well, one of the achievements that I ended up getting by accident, although there are guides on how to do it if you didn't get it randomly, you can actually get a character that is one of the FTL aliens.
Ha! Cute.
And so, yeah, it was like, initially I thought, oh, well, if I beat it with the main squad and then I'll just play with the other squads, it probably will get old quickly, but it really didn't, as each one is like, can play very differently, and then of course, after a while, you unlock the ability to create your own squad, and then there are achievements like beat the game with a squad made of only flying robots, or only, like, three robots of the same model, which sounds like it would be neat if you could just get one that's really good, but the game doesn't usually work that way, because you need, like, something that shoots all of them in a line, and a different robot that pulls them so that they're in a line, a different robot that puts shields on other things in that line so you don't blow them up. And so even just saying, oh, I'll find a robot that, you know, I can take three of them and punch a bunch of aliens, turns out to be a very difficult strategy, and I just got really sucked in a way I didn't expect, and it was a lot of fun.
I have realized in this last year that we are both pretty into tactics games.
Oh, I just checked. It was released at the beginning of this year. It just came out on the Switch in August.
Yes.
But yeah, I think it's easy for me to get overwhelmed by tactics games that have a lot of choices, and especially ones where if you make the wrong choice, then the rest of your run will be terrible and you'll just be losing and not know if it's because you had bad tactics or because you made a mistake 10 hours ago, which is something I've...
That is true of some games.
Yeah, like, I was going to say
XCOM 2 did that, yes.
Yeah. I think, although I don't know if it's that or if it's more just like, you know that you did bad on a mission and then... it's hard to tell if that's salvageable or if you're just doomed to a death spiral. But yeah, Into the Breach, by virtue of just giving you a squad and setting you loose, it's very easy to just get going. I also mostly played it on normal mode, although I played a couple times on hard mode for specific achievements, and I don't think this is true on hard mode, but in normal mode, it absolutely feels like every single turn, there is a perfect set of moves you can make for that turn, where you don't lose anything, and you maybe you don't kill any of the bugs, but you prevent the bugs from harming anything else, and then you'll be in a bad position, but then the next turn, you can find a different perfect turn, and eventually you will run out of turns and win. And that was very, very satisfying when that worked out. Less satisfying when I hit okay, confirm turn, and then something got knocked into a different place than I expected and blew up.
That's always fun. That is definitely one of the higher games on my list that I want to play, but I just have to find... Well, I would be restricted to playing the PC version, as they still haven't released a PlayStation, to my knowledge. I think they said that maybe, but who knows. I do. I want to play it. It might wait till I... That might be another Hollow Knight for me, though. That might mm-hmm. have to wait until I get a Switch. I do plan, like, right now my plan is to get a Switch probably for, my next birthday, probably November, when the next Pokemon is coming out, that'll be when I'll get a nice new Switch with the new, like, special theming of whatever the next Pokemon is, and I'll have my first Switch. That'll be awesome. So, anyways, my next game is Zelda, but not just any Zelda. This Zelda... made me fall in love with a truly open world that allowed me to take on its challenges in any order that I chose, with weapons that I could lose and have to replace, and a new focus on climbing walls to reach new places that would have otherwise been out of reach in any Zelda before this.
Oh boy.
Of course I'm talking about Zelda Link Between Worlds.
Of course.
But yeah, I just... I played A Link Between Worlds this year, about 3 or 4 months after having completed Breath of the Wild, and I loved A Link Between Worlds, and what astounded me more than anything is that everything that Breath of the Wild wanted to do, this game did successfully. This game showed me that there could have been a truly fantastic... Well, there is. A Link Between Worlds is that perfect example of how to do an open-world Zelda with all of those same mechanics that you can see in Breath of the Wild without making it a pain and frustration. And I have so many issues with Breath of the Wild. less so than when I started playing Breath of the Wild. But, yeah, it just... And something that I did want to say about Breath of the Wild that I don't think I ever got a chance to tell you, David.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say my greatest disappointment with that game when I finally finished it was the fact that it seemed pretty obsessed with the guardians that mm-hmm. were of... that's what they called them, right? No, the
Divine
the
Beasts.
No, not the Divine Beast, but the people who wrote it. The spirits that were trapped in there, but the guardians that had... that Zelda and Link knew when they were both... before the apocalypse, before Calamity Ganon arrives. Everything...
The champions.
The champions, yes. I didn't play the DLC, so maybe the DLC does a better job. But I was so disappointed because my experience with the game... was interacting with the descendants of those, or brother, of those champions, and for me to go through this whole adventure with each of these descendants to free their relative and to free the Divine Beast, only for those for, in my opinion, the new champions to just get discarded and replaced by the old champions who I did not have any history with, like myself, the Link who had lost his memories, had no history with, like, really bothered me. It really, I don't understand why it it really, like, more than anything else, like, all of the terrible weapon breaking and the how I feel like it really wasn't a good open world experience in any level. But anyways, like, the fact that they took these great characters that I actually got to spend time with and learn and then just discard them for these characters that I don't have a history with, like, I feel like that was the fundamental problem of everything, is that I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, they didn't even make amiibos of the new champions.
I don't know. I honestly, other than amiibos, I honestly don't remember what you mean by discarding them. I just, like I said, I consider...
What happened to any of them after the new champions take over the Divine Beasts?
Mm-hmm.
They get discarded.
What I was going to say was, like I just said, I just... All I remember about Breath of the Wild was that exploring and finding things and running around the empty wilderness, and not so much the, like, talking to people and story. So that, I guess, like, yeah, fair enough.
I would say probably the only of them that actually gets any... is the daughter of the
Zora?
Gerudos.
Oh, the Gerudos.
But she has a whole quest afterwards about getting her shield helmet thing of electricity.
Oh yeah. True.
That's about it. She still doesn't participate with you in anything after that point, but she at least is something that you can interact with and have a continuing story with. So that's at least something, but it's still, I don't know. It really irked me
that, I guess that was kind of what I meant by everything felt siloed off, was it was like you go to the place with the champion, with the new champion, and then you do your quest, and then you say, okay, thanks, bye, and you walk away and you don't interact with them anymore, because that they're just standing around back there and you're done with what you're going to do with them.
But I feel like they could have just had that new champion take over the Divine Beast, and then they could have participated with fighting Ganon at the end. Like, that, it would have been something so small, but would have been so much more meaningful and would have given me something. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that it could have been a more interesting game if it had instead been all about Zelda. Which I feel like all of the memories lead you to believe that this game should have been all about Zelda, but it wasn't for some reason, and I don't know why.
That's fair, too.
Also, the weapons suck a lot. Like, they're the worst.
Okay, well, you're wrong, but we can move on.
Okay. But yeah, so A Link Between Worlds is amazing, and go play that if you want to know what a good Zelda game is.
Link Between Worlds is really, really good.
It's so good. I was really impressed. I was worried. Like, when it came out, the reason why I didn't want to play it was hearing about how you could lose weapons, and that, oh, if you wanted to own the weapons, it would cost so many rupees, and, like, there were so many things I heard about it that scared me away.
Yeah, that was weird, just because I recall when playing it, like, that didn't seem like an issue at all, like I thought it would be.
Yeah, it really isn't. It's a fantastic game, and the whole Hyrule and Lowrule thing was just genius.
Mm-hmm.
The Hilda and Zelda Well, I just recently saw Sabrina, and they, the two aunts are also called Hilda and Zelda.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
So I was like, wait, is this a reference to that? Or yeah. Is there something else going on here?
I don't know about that.
There's so much good stuff going on in this.
I mean, they're also just, you know, German names, but...
Sure. That sounds similar enough.
Maybe it was intentional. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, I did. I think A Link Between Worlds is a fantastic game. And if you ever were worried about it, listener, about any of those weird mechanics that you had heard of the losing your weapons or having to rebuy them, or what's the, like the that you could do a large majority of the dungeons in any order. It's such a great game. It is such a great game. I do really highly suggest that one. Anyways, that is definitely enough Zelda talk, so go ahead.
I also played Gravity Rush 2, starting at the beginning of the year. Took a break for a while and went back to it later, and I'm glad I did, because it was... The structure of that game is very strange, but... I really enjoyed the first Gravity Rush. It was
I did as well.
A little bit by the fact that I played it on the Vita, and my Vita, the gyroscope has always been broken, so I had to turn off the gyroscope controls, and the slide mechanic was always difficult because that requires the gyroscope. So I was really happy that I could play Gravity Rush 2 on the PS4, and it was great. It really nails, like, the most important thing about, honestly, you know, most video games besides, like, turn-based games, but especially platforming games, is that just moving from place to place feels great. And, like, if you've nailed that, you've got a really good game already, and it did. And I was also, I think it would have been better if I had remembered the characters that I met in the first game, because the first one I played so long ago, and the second sort of act of Gravity Rush 2, you run into those characters again and see how they've changed. But other than that, like, other than the fact that I had to remember who they were, it was neat how they introduced new characters, reintroduced the old characters, and then the... Like, I didn't even realize it at the time, because I stopped for a while when I got to the end credits, but the part after the end credits is the actual, like, end of the story that wraps everything up in the first and second game. So, I thought I had finished the game except for a side thing, and it turned out that, no, that's actually very important, but I'm glad that I finished it. It was, like, the visuals are great. It's almost kind of funny how people complain about how games are too much beige and gray, and I guess most of the city in Gravity Rush and Gravity Rush 2, like, a lot of it is this sort of industrial beige, but even those areas look great. And then there's, you know, other areas like the marketplace, or the sort of, you know, nightlife area with neon signs look beautiful. The story was surprisingly, I don't know if I'd say deep, but it was more interesting and had more, like, you know, genuine emotion than I expected. Was... Overall, a game that had some pacing issues, but I'm really glad that I played it this year.
I've not even made it through all of the tutorial area. I think that game suffers a lot from having an extended tutorial.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
is too long. I do plan to go back to it eventually, but not right now. The last game I wanted to mention is The Banner Saga, which we did a podcast of, and I fully explained there why I loved that game. And that's all I really need to say about that one.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we both had lots of games that we wanted to play in 2018. In fact, I narrowed my... I wanted to mention it just because not only are there games that I wanted to play that might have made my list if I had played them, but I've narrowed it down further to just the games I've heard of in the last few weeks that I would have either came out in the last couple of weeks, or in one case, I only heard of it recently, and probably will play soon next year. So, the first of which... Well, I can go through all of these pretty quickly. Return sure. of the Obra Dinn is a puzzle game where you're trying to figure out how all of the crew on this ghost ship died, and you only get to see a snapshot of the moment when someone died because you have a magic pocket watch. So the puzzle is looking at this snapshot of when they died and trying to figure out who they are from this big list of names that you have of the whole crew. And you just have to piece together, like... Well, you also get to hear a couple of seconds of dialogue, which is often, from what I understand, like, oh my god, you can't do this, or let me in, never, and then, you know, someone gets shot or falls off the ship or something. It just sounds like it's a really fascinating the sort of puzzle game where you're actually puzzling things out and not just sort of you know, picking up items and using them on other items, but where you have to use what's the term? Lateral thinking to piece together who was where and, you know, what information you have and what information you don't have in a very clever way. After that is Ashen, which just came out this month, I believe, that has been described as a game that's building on the Dark Souls conventions, kind of like Hollow Knight was known for, but has also been described as, for the most part, easier than Dark Souls, which I've told you before, I've had a lot of trouble getting started in Bloodborne, and I kind of wouldn't mind playing a game that's like Dark Souls, but not as hard.
Hmm. I can understand that.
Mutant Year Zero also just came out, which is a real-time tactical game that's a lot like XCOM 2, but you just have a couple of units moving around in real-time, and apparently you can do a lot of, like, pulling out enemies individually or sneaking up on them and avoiding a big shootout with overwhelming forces, so that sounds really interesting. Hitman 2 also sounds really good. I heard a lot of praise for the previous Hitman, which is just...
Yeah, Hitman, the most recent... Well, actually, most of the series I have been interested in playing for a while, and I have played with suggesting it, but at the same time, I've never... Like, I've only played enough of the original Hitman to know that I did not like that game, and I would assume, and it's mostly because of the controls. So I would assume that the newer ones have better controls and are better games for it, but they are kind of at the same time daunting games of a genre that I do not have experience with.
Yeah, I think that.
But I am also very interested in them, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I've played some of the previous games. I honestly don't remember. I think it was a remake of the original, but...
Is there really a remake of the original?
I think, what was it, Blood Money was... It wasn't billed as a remake, but, like, it was sort of, most of the levels were based on the original levels. I honestly don't remember. I just know it's a bit convoluted, and I played one of the games at some point and had fun, but I've heard that the two new games have done a lot more to make it that sort of system-based game where you can do something in one part of the level that sets off a chain of events that gets someone on the other side of the level to stand up so that you can rush them into a different room so that they interrupt a different thing, and then you can, kill someone without having to actually, like, expose your identity in public, and then you just change to a different set of clothes and walk out while everybody is running around with things exploding. And
it, the way that I have really, like, gotten sold on it is the way people describe it the same way they would a puzzle game. And that's really where I find my interest in the game. So, yeah, if you want, I am definitely game for adding one of these into our list for next year.
Well, a thing that it seems like a great idea, but it also makes me feel like I need to get into it quickly in a way that I don't actually like, because I like to play games on my own timeline, is that they have these
Elusive targets. Yep.
Apparently, I've already missed this, which is a shame, but the Hitman 2 had a special target, which was Sean Bean, literally the actor Sean Bean.
And because, I hear he taunts you.
Yes, if you meet him, he'll be like, oh, are you the one who's going to try and kill me? Good job. Good luck with that. But it's a neat idea, but at the same time, the idea that I'm going to miss things by not playing at exactly the right time makes me not want to play it at all, so we'll see.
Sure. I the part that has really gotten me interested in it is the fact that with 2, if you own 1, all of those original levels are made available in the new game's engine.
Oh,
which
that's
also
neat.
Includes, like, now reflective surfaces are actually reflective. So, like, mirrors and stuff work like mirrors in the second game, but
didn't
in the first.
Oh, I've heard that. I've heard that people going back to, like, a level that they've played before and try to do the thing they did before, except that now they're, like, try to sneak up on someone with a knife and they see Agent 47 in the mirror and freak out.
Yeah. That sounds so cool, and it's such a cool thing to include a game from just a couple years ago, like 2, as like part of the second game as well. Like
that's
so cool. Yeah.
That's basically the modern version of Sonic 3 and Knuckles, right?
Yeah, sure.
Also, I'm pretty sure that I heard that Jack DeKeat, who's I mostly know him from my favorite podcast, Friends at the Table, which is an RPG podcast, and he's written some other games before, and he was a writer on Hitman 2, and so I'm curious. He's a British writer, and I'm pretty sure he wrote a free game a few years ago called... Okay, I'm going to have to look up the title, because I just remember it as Dr. Langoskov, but it is... Dr. Langoskov, the Tiger, and the Terribly Cursed Emerald,
oh,
a Whirlwind Heist. Yes. So the person who wrote that was one of the writers on Hitman 2, and I'm really curious how much that comes through, because Hitman, like I said, I've heard it described as a game where chaotic things can happen because of the system, but not traditionally like a comedy game where there are a lot of jokes. So I'm curious if that's a comes through that way, or if it's just more, I don't know, in indirect way that, like, I'm, you know, obviously he's a writer, he doesn't have to write everything exactly the same way, but that definitely made me curious.
Okay, one more game.
Oh, yes, of course, the recently surprise announced Hades, the follow-up to Supergiant. Games.
Oh, that's not actually out. But the beta or whatever?
It's in early access, but for a while, I've tried not to play early access games because I would rather experience them when they're done, but...
I still feel that way.
I enjoyed the Supergiant game so much, just like Pyre, which of course we played for the podcast, and Bastion and Transistor before that I'm really intrigued, and I want to play the early access just to get into it early, because I enjoy their art and their music and
the music
all of the
is
design
fantastic.
So much. Even if the gameplay is incomplete, I want to get in there and experience all of the art and the music.
I will get that game when it is fully released on more platforms. I'll say that much.
That's totally fair. So what games did you want to play, but or even have just heard of and now want to play, but haven't had a chance to?
I didn't limit myself to just this, like, immediate time frame. Battletech is definitely one of those games that I got obsessed with, but I know I did not have the time to play a PC-only game, but yeah, that is really high up there for me.
Oh yeah, I want to play that too. It is definitely a high time investment game, though.
Into the Breach that you mentioned, I definitely want to. Mutant Year Zero is also one that you mentioned it just came out, but it sounds like everything I love from other tactics games. And it's part of the reason why I said I think we've like, in this last year, I've discovered that we both really like tactics games. The other two are definitely larger games, or more, like, widespread popular games of Spider-Man and the one that I really enjoy how you have referred to as Dad of War.
Yes, I've seen it referred to as Dad of War, Dad of Son, and Dad of Boy. Yes, the new God of War.
I actually just finished God of War Ascension. That's what it was called. God of War Ascension, because it was a God of War game that I started last year and had kept meaning to finish. So I finished that one up. I own the new 2018 God of War, so that will probably be one of the games I play in January as I wait for Kingdom Hearts 3 to come out. Oh, Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah, I would like to play Dad of War as well, but I still need to play God of War 3. I'm not planning to play all of the, you know, portables that have been ported, or side games, or what have you, but I would like to finish the original trilogy before I move on to the, you know, sequel, revival, what have you.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with your choice to play God of War 3 first. I remember that game very fondly, so I totally understand that. Ascension is... I would say the weirdest thing about Ascension is that it came out in the PS3 life cycle, at which point Uncharted was a very, very popular series, and it took some of the mechanics from Uncharted and did not do a great job at it. It's weird. It's weird. But that was Ascension. Ascension. But I am very excited to see what they do with this new one. It just won Game of the Year, so yeah, I definitely want to know what the hype is about. And I think that does it.
All right, I'm now very excited about all the games that we played together or separately, and all the games that we can keep playing next year. So I'm glad we did that segment.
And with that, we will leave you by saying, game on. Booyah. I think we spent an hour just talking about our favorite games and 40 minutes on Spyro.
That sounds about right.
Good job. Okay. I'm going to put this stuff. Okay. Those are my timestamps for editing.